This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
We are, however, going to be moving on to our next story, which is focused on the fact that last week, the Perak government tore down an anti-logging blockade by the Kampung Tasik Kunek's Orang Asli community. It was first set up in February by the community in an effort to protect their ancestral lands and to stop logging that had been taking place without their approval or knowledge.
So in response to criticism, Perak Menteri Besar Datuk Seri Ahmad Faizal Azumu said that the blockade had to be removed because it encroached on state land. He also claimed that NGOs have sensationalized the case by calling it an act of bullying against the Orang Asli. Well, specifically, he said, this is not a cowboy country. We have laws. So if there are people freely encroaching on government land without regard to lawful provisions, we need to take appropriate action. That came from the Perak MB.
So I take issue with the term cowboy country because it feels very much... It feels like a phrase used by bullies, you know, for people who say, well, let's just follow the law that benefits me. why can't you play by the rules? Apa Miek, an Orang Asli representative, urged the government instead to recognise the community's rights over the more than 12,000 hectares of customary land. Wading into this issue is also the Orang Asli Development Department, or JAKWA. Julie Edo, its director, defended the community and said that they were trying to protect their rights and heritage.
So it's interesting on the last note that a federal agency is coming in defense of the Orang Asli. It's a welcome development. And, you know, it's also coming off the backs. You know, the blockade was set up right after the federal government had sued the Kelantan government for the case with the Termia community there. So it's nice to see at least some sort of state and federal balance happening here?
Yes, because obviously this is a long-running conflict. There are moments of where it kind of explodes in larger pieces. But generally speaking, it is just a conflict that we know is running underneath constantly. And so to have at least some form of federal involvement, like you said, it's helpful because otherwise you have, phrases like cowboy country being thrown around.
I wonder how much it is also to do with the fact that the current director of JAKWA is also an Orang Asli himself. So perhaps it is, in this case, tying it with a past story that diversity hire is important. And especially in offices where you serve that community, especially.
Yes. We're going to be speaking after this with Colin Nicholas, who is the coordinator of the Center for Orang Asli Concerns, to get a handle on what's actually going on here. We'll be back. BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We're talking about how the Perak government recently tore down an anti-logging blockade by the Kampung Tasik Kunek's Orang Asli community. And we're trying to understand the issues surrounding this. So on the line with us is Colin Nicholas, coordinator at the Centre for Orang Asli Concerns. Colin, thanks for joining us. So this isn't the first time that land disputes have come up between Orang Asli and state governments. Of course, we all heard of the recent high-profile situation in Kelantan, for example. What is it that allows these disputes to keep happening?
Well, basically, it's a question of recognition of Orang Asli rights to their customary lands, which is not recognized by the state government. I think when it comes to the land issue, there's one law, there's one constitution, and one land code, national land code. But the issue is that the recognition of Orang Asli rights to the customary lands is not codified. It's not written in any of those laws, the written laws. But given by the decisions of the court, where the Orang Asli have gone to court over such cases, the Orang Asli right is there under common law, no? So even though the Orang Asli do not have title rights to the land, even though the Constitution does not expressly say so, or there are no specific laws that say so, that say that Orang Asli has specific rights to Kashmir lands, but under common law, no? The courts have established that Orang Asli do have rights to their Kashmir lands if they can prove that they've been there over a certain amount of time and, you know, evidence of occupation and connection. So we have precedents to show that Kashmir land is recognized in law in Malaysia, but common law.
And what do we know about how long the Kunek's Orang Asli have occupied that area?
Okay, from what the people have told me and what I've seen there, that village, as far back as the early 70s, the government has already recognized as an established village. Because during the second emergency, the government built a landing point there for helicopters to bring assistance to them. And they also built a clinic. But as far as the people are concerned, they were there long before that. They can give you stories of and legends of, you know, particular places, sacred sites. They can show you old trees, the old graves, and so on. So as far as the court is concerned, this is ample evidence to show that they have been there in that area and have showed occupation and connections since time immemorial, as the term goes.
So let's look briefly at the case of Kelantan, right, where the federal government sued the state government saying they had violated the land rights of the Temiah Orang Asli community in Guam Musang. Why hasn't that had a knock-on effect on how other states handle land disputes with Orang Asli communities?
In fact, the move by the federal government to take action on behalf of the Orang Asli, you know, as it did in Kelantan, is the correct move. Because JAKWA, the Department of Orang Asli Advancement, is a federal government entity, and it should work for the rights of Orang Asli. But why are they not doing it in other states? That's the question you have to ask the Attorney General and the government. They should be doing it in all the states.
What do we know about why the QNX Orang Asli had resorted to setting up a blockade?
The Orang Asli for QNX, they are there in the traditional territories. Their traditional areas have been locked in the 80s. And they know the impact of what logging can do to their customary lands, to their, you know, livelihoods and so on. So even though they were resettled, you know, 30 years ago to RPS Dala and Kampung Agam and so on, the promises of development and advancement and better incomes in the resettlement scheme in RPS Dala did not materialize. So many of them, some of them, you know, the people of Kampung Chunex decided to go back to the traditional areas, first in 2011 and then more permanently in 2016 to re-establish the kampungs. So without government help, without any outside support, they were able to re-establish their community, planted rubber and so on. No? And they want to protect the land from further destruction. The logging that's happening now is not directly in front of the houses, but within the Kashmir territory, where it will affect their livelihoods, you know, if this is allowed to go on. And going by information I'm getting from them, what we are seeing now is just one aspect of one concession area. Other concessions have been approved. So they're going further and further into new areas. So it looks like a lot of the forest area is being given out to logging in that area, in Junex and the surrounding villages. So definitely the environment and their livelihoods will be affected.
Can you describe to us what you saw while you were in Chunex in terms of how logging has affected the area?
Well, the water supply in Chunex is there, but when it rains, it becomes muddied. But if you go out to the edge of the customary area, the water supply that supplies the neighbouring, where they're supposed to be, you know, Kampung Sarok and Kampung Tengah, that was affected. So the loggers were forced to build another small embankment to supply new water, supply water to the village of Sarum. But the other two villages, Kampung Tengah and Kampung Urat, their water supply is affected. And in fact, they have just asked, I am told, for 20,000 compensation for them to buy pipes and so on.
Have there been discussions so far between the different stakeholders, the Orang Asli, the state government, and loggers in Perak?
There were discussions between individual parties, no? Like loggers and Orang Asli, loggers, police and Orang Asli, forest department, loggers and Orang Asli, at different times in the villages, not in a very formal way. But most of the discussions were actually to get the Orang Asli to bring down the blockade, you know? Not so much as to recognize their rights and that they have a right to enter into an equal discussion about what to do with the issue.
So the Perak MB said that NGOs have sensationalized the Chunex issue. How would you respond to that?
I don't know which NGOs he's referring to, but our NGO has not sensationalized it. So I think the issue is not whether the NGOs have been sensationalizing the story. It's that the Menteri Besar of Perak has been minimalizing the impact of logging on the environment for the people of Perak and overemphasizing the fact that logging is so important for Perak's economy. So he has to also check his words, I think.
And on the other hand, JAKOA has put its support behind the Chunex Orang Asli. What's the significance of that and how will that affect the outcome of the issue?
The Director General, the new Director General of the JAKOA, Dr. Jili Ido, has come out with a very positive and very strong statement supporting the rights of the Orang Asli there. Unfortunately, for JAKOA in Perak and JAKOA in Creek, this has not been the case.
So what do you identify as the gaps in the issue here? Is it a matter of the state government not having the same level of understanding about land rights as with the Orang Asli?
I think the gap here is, I don't know whether when you say state government, you mean everybody in the state government. I think right now is the issue we have with the Menteri Besar of Perak, not the whole state government. Unfortunately, he represents the state government, so that's the way it goes. But the reality is that he has to convince us that logging is so important to the state that without it, the economy of the state will fall or collapse. He has to explain to us why also in another case like in Kampung Center in Bido, where Orang Asli land was given to a company, and because of that, they evicted the Orang Asli. And in the end, the Orang Asli took a case to court, counterclaim, and the court ruled that the land is Orang Asli land, 5,000 acres. No? And until today, the state government has not gifted the land as required by the court. So it clearly is a case of recognition. It's not a case of recognizing the Orang Asli land in Kampung Chunex so that the forest can be logged and turned into a casino or into a golf course or into a rubber or farming estate. No? The Orang Asli want to protect the forest. They want to use it and they want to protect it so that their livelihoods will not be affected, their cultures will not be affected as well.
So what can we expect to happen next?
If the case is not handled well, I think there will be confrontation because I know the Orang Asli are very, the Orang Asli in Kampung Chunex, they are very emboldened now. They are very staunch in their determination to protect their customary rights. And if the case is not handled well, I hope that, things do not turn ugly. So the best thing is for all parties to sit down, and that's what the Deputy Minister for Orang Asli did say at one time. All parties, all interested parties to sit down and work out a solution.
Colin, thanks for speaking with us. That was Colin Nicholas, coordinator at the Centre for Orang Asli Concerns. They recently collaborated with Google Earth on a project called Back to Roots, which compiles stories about the history and culture of Chunex. You can access those stories on Google Earth. You've been listening today to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9. The Business Station.